hear the stories call. Footsteps echo down an old town hall. Lights flash quick where the legends grew. Hollywood's riding back to you. Lights on the old frontier. Stories come alive right here. Step inside, the past is true. Hollywood's looking back at you. Film and TV.
Hi, it's Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Hollywood Film and TV Magic. Today we have a special show. I'm so excited because I'm here with my friend David Mallock. Okay.
Hello.
It's so great to have you. And David is such an integral part of my life because I am a huge fan. And you have just been a hero in my life, and you have been an inspiration and a mentor in so many things to me, as well as such a good friend. But when I think of movies like, I don't know, the Spring Break movies or Splash or Total Recall, or, you know, these movies that are iconic movies that you are part of and associated and have acted in. And then as the years have sort of unfolded, I have watched you as a producer, and I have watched you as a writer and as a filmmaker and as a creator. And I think the show that I was talking yesterday, we had a show and I was talking about the importance of story, why the telling of the story is really, like, from the times of dinosaurs and cavemen to the indigenous, you know, people to people around fires. And the art of the story and how filmmaking has changed now that we can make movies, you know, as independent filmmakers.
Yeah.
And so you have been, like, at the pinnacle of success in each and every category, whether that's as an actor or as a producer, as a writer, as a director. And so I'm so thrilled that you are here with me today and to talk about the Hollywood film and television magic.
Well, it's always lovely to hang with you. To see your face and talk and stuff.
Thank you. So I guess I want to start with the beginning of the beginning.
Yeah.
So when you were little at one point, do you know that the other day I was helping my parents clean their house and I found my baby teeth?
Oh.
They were all there.
Oh my God.
And I was really little. I was so little. I was
Tiny
But
teeth.
when you were a child, like, you know, like, the boys want to be firefighters and astronauts, and did you always want to go into entertainment? Was that, like, a dream of yours?
I had an astronaut costume, I remember, at one Halloween thing. I did, and Superman for another thing. My parents were both performers. My mother was a puppeteer when I was growing up, and my dad was an actor well before I was born, and that's actually how they met. But I did some things, like when they would come up, like in school, and we got to do, like, play kind of things. I always enjoyed that, and I got into it for real high school, I think. I went to music and art high school in New York as a musician, and took a drama class really because we only had to read plays, which were this thick, as opposed to reading entire novels, which were that thick. And instead of doing book reports, you got to do, like, a scene or a monologue, which seemed way easier and way more in my personal wheelhouse of stuff. And I just started getting into it then. And right around that time, my dad started getting back into acting again. We lived at that time on Roosevelt Island in New York, and they had a little community theater there. And dad did a couple of plays there. What did he do? We'd wait until dark. Is that what it's called? The one
Yes,
that.
wait till dark. Yes.
Did that, and I think The Crucible, and then they did a production of Fiddler on the Roof, which we were both in. He played the butcher. I can't remember his name, but and I had some part in it, so we were in a play together, which was fun. And then I just kept going with it and did a show on Broadway for one performance,
What was the show?
it was Runaways,
Oh,
which is
I have
how I met.
that
Yeah, of
album.
course you did. It was which I was familiar with because growing up at that time on Roosevelt Island, our mutual Mr. Spano, Vincent Spano, was he had actually been in. He was in the workshop production of Runaways and actually developed one of the parts, and it happened to be the one that I did. So that was just a coincidence. There was this guy kind of down the hall there who kid who was an actor and happened to be in this show that I was auditioning for, and I auditioned for it a few times, and so then we became really great friends, and of course that's how I met you, was through him many years later. But yeah, so I did this show. I got in as an understudy and went on one performance, and then they closed the show 2 weeks later, so I never went on again. That's my Broadway career.
Oh, what a
But
great show to be associated
well,
with. Like that album as a teen was so impactful.
Yeah, it was terrific. It was and so yeah, it was a great album. So basically what my rehearsal process for the play was, they said, here's the album, here's the script, learn them, and we'll do rehearsals every once in a while. And so we did. I think I maybe had two or three rehearsals and then had to go on, and then never again. And who else was there? Oh, our next door neighbor for 5 minutes was Sarah Jessica Parker and
Yes.
her entire family of 43 brothers and sisters, and she was doing Annie at the time.
Yes.
She took over after she. I don't know if which one she was in the run, but she was like the second or third version of Annie, and yeah. So at that point, I just thought, well, this is my track now. So I just kept going and acted for the rest of my life, whenever they let me, and when they don't let me, I make up my own shit.
It's awesome. As I'm talking with you, you see me technically, I am jumping off for 1 second. I'm with you. I'm just plugging in a different plug as I'm seeing the electrical world here. Stay with me. Be here. We're not going anywhere.
In the meantime, I'm going to do
I'm back. I'm back with you as I
a
sing
song
lullaby.
with hand farts. If I can. Oh, there we
Love
are.
it. There you go. I'll see you much longer than now. And then movies that like I'll think about Spring Break or Turner and Hooch or Splat. You've been involved with these iconic movies that people have followed for years that have these huge, incredible fan bases. And a lot of times when people get into the movie industry, they'll do a movie and people say, "What were you in? Never heard of it, or let me look it
Yeah,
up," or, "Oh yeah, I saw that. Who were you in?" But you've been in movies that people
I've done stuff
see
that
like a
people have heard on,
supermarket and they know who you are.
and they're not always, they weren't always a lot of work. Like Spring Break was, I was in the entire thing, obviously, and the very first film that I did, well, The first film that when I moved after I moved to LA, actually I did a I was an extra in a couple of films while I was in New York. I did what were they? I was an extra in The Warriors, which is very
Wow.
cool. There's a scene at the beginning where there are supposed to be 50,000 gang members, and so they had I think 3,000 extras for that, and I was one of those. It's a movie called Hero at Large is what it ended up being called. It was a John Ritter movie, but where he was a superhero or something, and I had a tiny part in that. And then when I was in LA, I got the very first thing I did was a Great Performances thing playing Mark Twain in Life on the Mississippi, which was about to shoot like in 2 weeks before they shot like the guy who was going to be playing Mark Twain broke his arm, so they quickly had to cast and they cast me, so which was great fun. So that was like I'm in every single shot in that, and not many people have seen it, but people do, and people who have seen it remember it, and it was it's a lovely little film, which you can catch in its entirety on the YouTube now, I think, if you like Mark Twain and stuff. It's a sweet little film. Yeah, but I mean, and things that I've done over the years, some of the bigger movies are not huge parts, but they're nice parts that I shot for, a day or a week or something. Like Splash was, a couple of days, but it was a fun part though. And I love that. One thing I love about Splash is that people refer to it. Like I was listening to Keith Olbermann or something, and he was referring to the Trump boys as the moron twins, and that phrase, the moron twins, that's me. I was one of the original moron twins, so that's if I do nothing else.
Wow.
So,
And then from the, and then you've done a lot of television too,
yeah, I
film
did a
and
lot of
TV.
television, did a couple of series, and a whole lot of guest things. Just as I say, I show up on your TV at 2 in the morning a lot. If you watch, like now they do 24-hour Murder, She Wrote marathons. If you watch long enough, you will see me.
That's so funny. I was in Rome and I just got taken a shower and I came out of the shower and I was in the hotel room in Rome and I just turned on the TV and I was on television speaking Italian. And I was doing great. My Italian was amazing. I didn't even know I knew Italian. But The Insiders, the TV series I was on,
That's
was playing
great.
in Italy and I was watching me speak Italian. I was so proud and impressed with myself.
I have seen myself doing speaking Mandarin Chinese and Italian, and it's always interesting to see like what kind of voice they cast as mine, and they're usually very goofy voices. So the Italian version of mine was borderline Goofy the dog, Mickey Mouse's friend. It's almost that.
Yes.
That's kind of what they thought the voice that should go along with this face is. So.
That's fun. Now we did a TV series together, Temporary Insanity.
Right, we did. We were trying to get that going, and it was a fun pilot thing that we did. Yeah, that was fun. I mean,
That
so
was
we were adjacent. We didn't do we get to do it? We didn't have scenes together, but we
We
were
had
working
one
on
scene.
it.
We had one
We
scene
did?
together that we had, yes, where in the psychiatrist's office,
Oh,
when I
that's
come to
right.
see my daughter and you tell me to have a seat
That's right. Yeah, that was
on
fun.
that, which was, yes, which
You
was
should
a
watch
lot
that.
of fun to work with you. And it was so much fun because in all the years that I've known you and I've admired your work, and I admire, not just admire, I admire your work so much. But you get to see someone else's process. Some people go off into a corner, some people study, some people, whatever that is, they, become, they ride with the policeman to become policemen, or they become hookers to hook, like whatever it is, I don't know. But this was incredible to me because I've never seen somebody process and prepare as quickly and as thoroughly as you do. It's almost like before you come in, you so embody the character that no matter what is thrown at you, sort of like, you're in a batting field or something, that you are able to, it doesn't matter if they change the set, it doesn't matter if they change the lines, it does it, you are never thrown. I've never seen you be thrown. You just are that guy. You just become that guy, and anything that happens and comes through that, and that sensibility to create and be so versatile and so flexible and so rich and so full and so complete within mere seconds is just awe-inspiring. It really was amazing to watch you and your process of your acting. So.
Well, that's lovely. Thank you. I hadn't. Well, it's one of the things. I mean, I 90% of the work that we do as actors is before we're on camera. I mean, that's like this little sliver of the moment, and it's like, yeah, I always figure that, trying to come in with as much as possible, trying to come up with possibilities and ideas, and just having, because you don't have an opportunity until then to work with a director, or you don't know what the other actors are going to be bringing, and you don't always know what the flavor of the thing is really going to be. I did a thing. They do a thing here in Portland that my friend Darius Pierce was one of the inventors of, called Anonymous.
As we are talking with David Nell, one of my favorite all-time actors, producers, writers, creators, storytellers, inventors of imagination. I mean, truly, if there is a sandbox of imagination, David lives in it. And most recently, you might have seen him in the movie Pig, Nicolas Cage. And that movie, there was a scene that it makes your heart stop when you watch Academy Awards and you watch Emmy Awards and you watch the People's Choice Awards, and they pull a scene and they'll show you this is this actor's scene that that they're up for the award for, and this is the a little small sampling of their talent, but the impact that that scene had in this film or in this project. And David has a scene with Nicolas Cage in the movie Pig that I would invite you, just if you are listening to this podcast, watching this podcast, however you are joining with us today, I absolutely invite you to go ahead and to Google Pig David Nell and to play this scene, and you will see such an extraordinary talent. And one of the things I've also learned from David is in self-filming and in self-promotion, everything that he has done in being able to create stories across the board, not over, only for himself, but for other filmmakers. So I'll tell you a little bit about this project that we were working on as we were waiting for David to come back and to join us. So we worked on a television series. It was a sitcom called Temporary Insanity. It was so much fun to work on. So Temporary Insanity is this based on the lead character who is this very beautiful, beautiful, like model, beautiful, and vaster smart psychiatrist. And she is so pretty. And she's so sexy and she's so smart that people don't think she's the real deal. So she's actually having trouble getting clients. So what she does is she decides to barter and to trade work for therapy. So she'll have like all of these people with mental health problems, or all these people that are now the security guard or the maintenance or the receptionist, people with anger issues. It was hysterically funny. And the character in the show on Temporary Insanity had very wealthy parents. The parents want to support her and she wants to do it by herself. And I played the mother. And David played one of the funniest characters. If you look up Temporary Insanity and David now, his character was hysterical. And every time he was in a scene, it just made me laugh. So he was just fantastic. And I'm hoping that he can come back and join us. But as we're talking about film and television, there's also, he was talking about acting and going from understudying in Broadway. And so I'll back up on a little bit about what he said. So most shows that are professional shows have understudies. So if something were to happen to the lead character, that understudy is able to go on Broadway. A lot of times their understudy might be guaranteed one or two performances around. Other times they're not guaranteed a performance at all. They could be there 3 years, 5 years backstage and never go on. But there's been famous, famous, famous actors, people like the Shirley MacLaines, the Cheetah River, people that have been acclaimed in the industry that originally started coming on as an understudy. So for David to be an understudy and to step onto a Broadway stage in a show that was as successful and as strong and as powerful as Runaways, when I was a kid, the haunting music of Runaways, I used to listen to it all the time. And then he was asking about Fiddler on the Roof. He said his dad was the butcher in Fiddler on the Roof, and he did Fiddler on the Roof with him. I did Fiddler on the Roof. I did the tour with Theodore Burkell. Had a blast doing that. I played Hobbes. So yes, he was correct. The butcher was Laser Wolf. And then when you come out into Hollywood to do a television show, when David was talking about how he auditioned several times for a show, sometimes people can audition for a show over and over and over again, even several years, until finally they are finding the right cast or the right direction or the right fit. Even for myself, so many times I've auditioned for television shows, and maybe the child didn't look like they would be my child, or the spouse didn't look like, or somebody else that for some other reason is working in that show. But if they are interested in you and you have that opportunity to keep coming back. So I had an acting coach tell me once to stop auditioning and to just pee on carpets, to literally go into the room just like a puppy and to leave a mark. Because it might be 3 years later, 5 years later, a month later, they might say, "Remember that girl," or "Remember that man that was in there." And we'd love to get them back in for this project. So, shows that go into syndication, shows that are played, as David was talking about, Columbo, Murder, She Wrote, that are on 24 hours a day, that you have the opportunity to see these shows, The Golden Girls. It's great for our actors that have done parts because we're able to be played and aired and be able to see different audiences. Because originally, if a television show had a time slot, let's say your time slot was Thursday from 7 to 8. If somebody was not home at that Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m., they would not have the opportunity to see that episode, to see that show. Eventually, the show might go into reruns. But now, the fact that we have these 24-hour channels, for actors and for storylines, we're able to reach a wider viewing of audiences, and more people are able to experience the art of entertainment, storytelling, and really finding actors, find performances with actors such as David now that you have the opportunity to see. Are you with us now? Yes, I could say.
That.
All of these magical, wonderful, marvelous, stupendous, brilliant things about you all the time.
Which I didn't get to hear any of, but
So I was
so
talking about Pig
we're talking.
when you were gone. And so I was saying you just recently did this movie with Nicolas Cage, and
Yeah.
that I was talking about that scene that when you see it, the Academy Awards, or you see an Emmy Award, you see an event that they will play a scene that highlights that actor's talent, versatility, flexibility, but also something that touched you when you saw that movie or that show, something you remember that moment, you remember that line, you remember that was the thing that literally either gutted you or excited you or elated you or took you from one place to another place inside yourself and inside the story. And the scene that you have in the restaurant with Nicholas is that scene, not only for this movie, but it also shows the kaleidoscope of your talent, the incredible layering, the multiplicity of who you are as an actor. And everything that you say matters, and everything that you don't say matters. And can you talk a little bit about that role and working on that film?
Yeah, it is. It is probably my favorite acting day ever. I'll just say that. Just the actual working of it. But there, I get asked a lot about that particular scene, and people will say, how did you get the whole range of emotions that happens in there? And honestly, the first thing that I say is, well, it was written down. So the script was amazing. The script that was written by Michael Sarnowski, who also directed it, was just is just brilliant. The screenplay is, and the way that scene and that character were written, the whole journey that he takes just in that scene from being someone who is kind of at the top of his game and has this very successful restaurant, and being confronted with someone who was a mentor of his years ago, and then remembering that he was fired by that guy, and that was maybe one of the worst days of his life. And then spiraling from there, as the guy, as Nick's character, is really just trying to find out what happened to his truffle pig, this pig that he had that he loved, and my slowly being aware that, oh, I think I know what happened, and I think it might be my fault, and it just. Just and being just completely taken apart in the moment. And this is another thing we were talking about, like, how do you prepare for all that? And so much of what we get to do, if you're super lucky, is that you get stuff that you really resonate with. And when I talked with Michael Sarnowski a few days before shooting, I wanted to make sure, first of all, that we were on the same page about what I wanted to do with it, because I didn't get to meet him during the audition. It was just a taped audition, and it got sent in, and I got selected for it. But I wanted to make sure that I talked to him first about it, because there was really specific things that I wanted to do with it, that I saw that there was an opportunity to really go deep with this character in a way that I don't usually get to do. And I said, as I said, just to make sure we were on the same page. And he said that he saw a lot of actors for the part, and that there were, I think he said, like, nine different emotional beats that needed to be hit, and that I was the only person who got, like, all nine of them. So it was like, oh, good, okay, then we're on the right track there. And because I really understood the character. I understood what my own version of what he has it was going through. And it just really resonated with it in a way that I thought I got to bring a lot into it. I mean, there's a moment where it's specifically written in the script there that he's having a meltdown as the scene is going on, and he's like trying to be completely put together, and his face isn't listening to his brain anymore. So he's trying to smile and kind of, like, be laugh it off what's happening in the scene, and it's just not going well, and his he's just not functioning. And I was aware. I've had moments like that in my life. From we were talking about childhood stuff, and I remember a couple of moments when I was a kid where something would happen where I would start laughing so hard that I couldn't stop laughing, and then eventually would just be in tears. And it was a thing that could happen every once in a while. And I remember a few times that it did. And I thought, oh, that's exactly what this guy's going through, but as an adult. So that'll be fun to play. And so that was the stuff that I really loved about the character and being able to do that. And that performance, which a lot of people have come to me and said that there was something about that moment that really resonated with them. Somebody being at a point in their life where suddenly they were wondering, well, what have I been doing all my life? Why did I not have, like, there was some dream that I had a while ago, and why did I not roll with it? Why didn't I let it happen, or why didn't I pursue it, or whatever? And it's such a great question to ask, and that I think that's why that particular scene in the movie resonated so well with people, and is in fact that I'm looking into to taking it further and seeing if we can expand on that, taking these characters that he wrote in there and turning it into something more, which I can't really talk about right in detail right now, but I'm digging into it even deeper than I ever have with a character before, which has been fun and interesting, but I think it's worth it.
The idea. I mean, I've fallen in love with the character, and I've fallen in love with your expression of this character. And I would be excited to see anything. If you've ever wanted to see a character continue on, this is one that you're just. It's such a great dive into who this person is that you care about this character immediately as an audience member, as a viewer, as an observer, and as a humanitarian. Like a person on this planet that's alive, you fall in love and you care about this guy, and then you want to know what happens after this movie. There's like this intrinsic curiosity of what happened and where did he go and is he okay? And you want to know all these things. So I love the fact that you are going to build on this and continue this on and open the door for this character to live and to have a life and for people to actually be able to feel, because so many, like you're saying, there are nine level layers in this character, and we all have that. We're all like have these emotions and these feelings and these. I was working on a television show, and the television show that I was on, the people were the most manipulative, volatile, vindictive, backstabbing people that I had ever come across. And the show was a spiritual conscious show. Like you would think it was about love and peace and humanity and joy and whatever. And one night, a friend of mine called me and I was crying. And he said, "What's going on?" And I said, "I feel like I'm judging these people. And the me, the Nicole that I choose to create does not judge anybody." And so I was having problem within myself because this was awful, and I don't want to be a judgmental person. Me, Nicole, the person that the girl that I'm giving to the world and having the opportunity to live this life, doesn't want to be judgmental. And my friend said, "Honey, baby, listen to me." This is Greg Fournier, the writer that wrote like Beretta and Kojak. He's amazing, right? He said, "Honey, baby, listen to me." He said, "Of all the gifts that God has given you, and He has given you many, and they are plentiful and whatever," he said, "the greatest gift He has ever given you is your ability to see." It's your vision and your sight. You're able to see the world, which is how you were able to do, because you see when there's a problem and someone's hurt, whatever, you see. And he said, if you see that these people are not in alignment, leave. You're not judging them, leave. You see what other people aren't seeing? Why are you there? Go, right? And I never forgot that conversation because I sat there with all of this inside of me. To me, I don't want to judge people. And the other part of me going, oh, they're these mean, awful people and they're doing these horrible things, right? And so when you watch your character in the movie Pig, it's like it's so relatable because we have inside each of us these emotions that fight the other emotions and that are friends with the other emotions and the ones that are trying to help and rescue the other emotions. And like all of those things live inside of us. And you show that so beautifully and so clearly that I think as a human being, you watch that and you're like, oh, it you just get attached to it somehow. You feel it in your soul.
Well, the thank you. And you know, it's that thing when there's the moment in the film where Robin, Nick's character, says, "Why didn't you open your pub?" And the answer is, it's complicated, because it's like, that's, you know, for each of us have gotten to where we are through what you're saying. I mean, it's a lifetime of choices and micro choices and avoidances and embracing things and going and having to decide who you are when you're with someone particular, or, you know, trying not to. If you're that kind of person who doesn't want to rile things up, then you have to make adjustments in yourself to not rile up a person, and all kinds of things that, with those little choices that we're not even aware of, you know, from birth, right? We're totally trying to get through. We're trying to survive, and from babies, we either survive by, you know, being demanding, screaming babies and getting the stuff that we want, or some of us will try to just manipulate so that the big people don't eat us or whatever is going on. But we make these little adjustments that we continue to make do versions of those things even as grown-up adults, and you know, they're all tied together, and yeah, it was really beautiful just to see that. Now, this is the thing that I really loved about Michael's writing, is that, and he also wrote, after he did Pig, he did A Quiet Place Day One, which is a lovely film. And if even if you're not a horror kind of thing, it's so worth watching. But all these characters have these incredibly rich lives that are, everybody who passes through, you know, it has an entire life, an entire history, and an entire worldview. And you know, it's nobody, there are no tropes that go on. You know, there's no cliches. There's just people who are real people, who we're only glancing through this story, and we only get to see this little sliver of them. But everybody has a real depth and real life and real truth to them. And I really, really admired that. And when I was in LA last, I got to hang out with him for a few hours. I was hoping just to get a quick catch a quick coffee or drink with him, and we ended up talking for 4 hours and just said, and so much in common about what we love about storytelling, and you know, the human experience, and puppetry, and magic, and things, you know, you know, just being able to have an appreciation of the stuff, the quirks and foibles that make us human, and sometimes come out in other people in ways that are uncomfortable or not great, and your friend telling you, yeah, you can appreciate those, and you and I both have that ability. You can see people who are going through their version of life in bad and maybe abusive ways, and you can go, okay, I can appreciate that, but I don't have to be in on it. So I don't have to, I can just watch it from afar. I
Absolutely.
don't have to feel like, yeah, this doesn't have to be my experience here. So thanks, and you do your thing, and I'm going to go over here and sit by a tree and be happy. Bye.
And I love that you talked about Michael's writing. So I'd love to just talk about Pig as a movie, as an example of this movie kind of came out of nowhere, had such a huge, huge, huge impact, and audiences and reviewers and people went bonkers and nuts. And today, and I'd even love to talk to you about some of the movies you're making and filmmaking for new filmmakers. But we used to think of movies as these big studio films, that you needed to be on a lot and you needed these big films and all of these millions of dollars to be able to make. And as we've been talking about Hollywood film and television, I talked about the birth of like the Westerns and the silent movies and the talkies came in and how they used to have like the rolling cameras on a platform and whatever that is. They were out in the rain and the wind and the elements and not in sound studios. But the films today don't have to be, not saying that there isn't value in the big blockbuster movie, but they don't have to be in that lane, like door number one, door number two, door number three. That does not mean that the boat is better than the vacation to Peru or something like, right? Like it's everything has value. And so could you talk a little bit about today's films and filmmaking in the current times?
Well, one of the things that's being really exciting to me is some of the new tools, the generative AI tools that are available now that allow people who, it used to be that the only way you could get films made was if you start with a whole lot of money. I remember there was a book that came out in the 90s sometime that was called Feature Filmmaking at Used Car Prices. I forget who wrote it, but it
A
was
great
specifically,
title.
yeah, it was a great title, and it was specifically about how you can make an actual feature film for $7,000. And this guy
Wow.
had broken it down. He'd done it himself, but it was about shooting it on 16 millimeter film, and you weren't going to be able to buy new 16 millimeter film. You were going to have to go to a place where they process 16 millimeter film and get the ends of film, and they would sell you for a discount price, like if somebody had shot something on a 1,000 foot reel and they only shot 900 feet, then that 100 feet that was at the end, you could buy. So he was telling you how to buy these little bits of film, and you were going to shoot your film on one location, and it was going to be at a house somewhere. So whatever you were writing, forget the big blockbuster idea that you had, but think of something that's going to take place in one location that you can do in little short things, little short moments. And it was a revelation for a lot of people. And when digital, first came out, which was early this century, it gave people the possibility of shooting stuff on video that didn't look like VHS, that actually was good quality video that you could shoot and you could edit yourself. And there were groups that popped up around there. I think actually that's I think where we met. There was a group called the Filmmakers Alliance, which I don't know if they're still around, but it was a bunch of filmmakers, and we would get together, I think every Sunday or every other Sunday. No, I think it might have been every week. And we at a theater somewhere, and everybody would get together, and we would screen whatever we had shot that week, if anybody was doing anything. And there was a little bit where you would say, I got a thing that I'm going to do this week. I'm working on my short film, or I want to shoot a scene for my feature, and I need I need a camera guy. I need some a sound guy, and people would share whatever they had. It was very communal, and they had somebody had several people had good cameras that you could use or borrow, and so we made films. We made a lot of short films, and some there were some really good feature films that came out of that. And now, 20 years later, the stuff that's happening with AI and the ability to if you understand how these tools work, you can get some really amazing stuff. And it's I know there's a lot of controversy about stuff, but but the controversy I don't think lies where we are. And what I mean by that is, anytime new technology comes out, it's going to affect the process by which things get done. I remember when CDs came out for the first, CDs over vinyl LPs. All the LPs were made in like two towns, like in two. That's Vince's father calling me, but I cannot talk to him
Sounds
because I'm talking to
perfect.
you. Hang on. Stop. Stop. There were two towns that all they did, like their big factories, were making record albums. And then CDs happened. So all the factory work from for those two towns like just dried up. So that happened. And things like that keep happening throughout anytime technology changes. But at the other end of that, for what's happening now is you don't need many millions of dollars to make a film. You don't need many thousands of dollars to make a short film. You can do things that are no longer limited even by your imagination. You can do things. I did a promo piece just recently, which I just showed you because I finished it yesterday and showed you. That's been kind of going in my head, and it was something that if I had to shoot it physically, it would have cost me money that I did not have, which meant it just wouldn't have gotten done. But I was able to be very specific about what I wanted, and I kind of worked. I designed it out and had thoughts about how I wanted to make this work, and I created it, and it really works. And I'm going to use this to sell a project that I'm working on. And I don't think it could be better. I mean, it's just really amazing that I was able to go from what was in my head, this kind of complicated idea, and get it to work and actually build this thing that is exactly what was in my head. It's kind of amazing, and telling stories, that's what it's about. It's trying to, how do you communicate with other people, the human things that we want to get across to people. And it's like, well, there are ways to do it, and we have now technology that lets us do it like we couldn't. And the technology is changing like weekly. The thing that I was able to do, I probably wouldn't have been able to do 2 weeks ago. In fact, I couldn't do it 2 weeks ago, which is why I didn't do it several weeks ago. I was got to a point where I got stuck, and then it was like things changed a little bit, and I said, let me see if I can do it now, and I could. And
It's
yeah.
brilliant. And so I know we only have a couple minutes left as we're coming up at the top of the hour.
Oh,
And
gosh.
any advice, just a gem for a young filmmaker that,
Yeah, look into this stuff. Look into what there are a lot of YouTube channels that deal specifically with AI filmmaking. Curious Refuge is one. There's a yeah, there's a bunch of people who are really digging into what's possible and what's becoming possible. And I've been I used there's a an aggregator. It's a thing called Higgs Field, which has, you pay a monthly fee and you get access to a bunch of different of these video and image generators that are, I say, are changing constantly. But some of the, go and take a look at some of the stuff that's being done there and see if you're not inspired. Because we're getting to the point where anything that you have in your head, you will be able to communicate, which is pretty powerful, I think.
That's great. Well, that's great advice. And favorite movie of all time?
Favorite movie of all time. I've been thinking a lot about Magnolia recently, which I love so much about it. I love the structure of it, that it starts out with a narration that is that basically says gives you a whole bunch of weird things that seem impossible, but they happened. And that basically sets up the structure of this story, which is essentially half a dozen short stories that are interwoven. But something
That
happened
goes.
at the end, and it's because, and you're okay with it because it was set up at the beginning that weird things happen, so just deal with it. So when weird things happen, it's like, nope, you let me know, and it's and so. But I love all the real human stories in there. So that, I
I
think.
love that. So that brings us back to the top of the show, which is such a great way to close out, which is about the importance of story
Yes.
and how film and television as a form and media. An artistic expression that have the ability to share stories at such a high, complex, innocent, curious, fun, fascinating, adventurous, and whimsical way that they take us to other places in our visions and dreams, and they also teach us about ourselves, right? Our own lives, our own
Yeah.
hearts,
How
our relationships.
do other human beings get through this stuff that I think I'm the only one going through? Like that kind of thing.
That's brilliant. Well, it's been fabulous to have you here, and I miss you, and I wish I could reach through the screen and say hi. And it's so great to see you, and I'm so proud of everything that you're doing. And I just look forward. I want to be in front of every premiere. That if anything you ever do, your talent is just extraordinary. And it's such a gift to the planet and the world. And how smart they were, runaways, and how smart this industry is to keep you in it and
Wow.
through it, and part of this tapestry in this world. So, as an actor, as a producer, as a writer, as a director, as a creator, as an innovator in film and television, it is an honor and a pleasure. And for everybody out there, especially for the young filmmakers, live your dreams. Step forward.
Yeah.
Step forward.
Do it.
I remember Gary Marshall, the
Yes.
director, once said, nobody ever died from embarrassment. And I love when he said that because take chances.
Yeah.
Take chances. Take chances with your art. Take chances with your ideas. Take chances with your visions, with your dreams, with your films. Tell the stories that you want to tell. Tell the stories that are in your heart and in your head, and stories that you think are going to make a difference in the world, and stories that are going to make a difference in your life. And we look forward to seeing your movies. We look
Right
forward to,
on.
if you are out there and you are a filmmaker, we look forward to supporting you. If you have any questions, write to us and we will be happy to come on and answer any questions you have about the history of film or film and television today. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Hollywood Film and Television Magic. Thank you, David L., for being with us today.
Hi, thank you.
Lights on the old frontier, every legend lingers here. Through the lens of time and truth, every step rewrites you. Take the trail, no need to fear. Hollywood is standing here in the dust where the stories grew. The screen is looking back at you. artist and the movie's me. That's where the stories never sleep.